Last week, the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners unanimously voted to refer the Children's Safety Levy to the November ballot. If passed by voters, the measure would raise over $7 million each year for at least 5 years for Clackamas County organizations that work directly with children, youth, and families surviving abusive and unhealthy living environments. This means the opportunity for more staffing and better access for children and youth living in unsafe situations. As my guest today, Simon Fulford, the Executive Director of Parrot Creek, a nonprofit that works with parents, children, and adolescents in need, shares funding is needed now more than ever given the pandemic. Many nonprofits that work with children and youth are often the first point of contact for at-risk children experiencing violence at home, abuse, and neglect. Here's more with my conversation with Simon Fulford.
Can you tell us how, if this levy is passed by the voters in Clackamas County, how that will help your organization?
That's an excellent question. So, you know, the ballot measure and the levy itself would raise, possibly up to about $7.5 million per year that would be targeted for these, you know, for these much needed services for children victims of abuse and violence and neglect or exposed to that. No one organization is at all named in the ballot measure and in any of the language, because that's inappropriate. But the idea behind the levy is, you know, a lot of this need of our children and families is going unmet. There are lots of services and provision out there, but we know that many, many kids kind of fall through the cracks. They go unnoticed, and abuse and neglect sort of, you know, as it were, adversely affects their lives. And then they do come onto the radar. They may end up in hospital, or, you know, they're noted by a teacher or something like that. So the intent of these funds is to really fill some gaps in those services. And organizations such as Parrot Creek Child and Family Services, but any organization that is providing this type of service in Clackamas County would be eligible to apply for these funds through some sort of contracting scheme that the county will be supervising. So for Parrot Creek in particular, you know, we provide some very intensive residential programs. We do some outpatient treatment, and it's very likely that those types of services that we offer would fit with the criteria. And so therefore we would propose to increase that capacity to provide, you know, additional beds for youth who are unsafe in their homes and don't have homes to go to. It might be that we would, you know, use funds to provide, you know, intensive outpatient treatment for youth who have been victims of abuse and neglect. And then there's other organizations that might be, you know, proposing to provide those, you know, very intensive assessments of youth, children who have been children who have been exposed to abuse, to do that assessment and to get them the appropriate medical and psychological support. And then there's a whole prevention side of it. Organizations that work more on the preventative side, who work in schools or work in communities, who identify vulnerable children, vulnerable families, where there is a kind of a higher likelihood of abuse or neglect or exposure to violence to happen, and to put in place services, wraparound supports, protective factors that might help ensure that those kids are not exposed to trauma.
Something I'd like to know, and I think many listeners would want to know as well, is given the COVID-19 pandemic, many schools are closed, many after-school programs, many activities in areas where children would normally be outside of the home, for the most part, aren't open. So for mandatory reporters, they're not necessarily around to keep a check on children and youth who are being abused or suspected of being abused. Can you talk about why this type of funding is critical, especially right now?
That is a really excellent question, and it certainly wasn't kind of part of our thinking in, you know, 10 years ago, as
sure.
It were, although it was, my answer will get to how it was somehow in our thinking, but really as the coronavirus pandemic kind of deepened and expanded in our communities, it really brought to the fore where this type of measure and this type of initiative could really be even more powerful and impactful in our communities, because you've highlighted exactly a real challenge that our communities and our families are going to face. kids will not be in school for the foreseeable future. Kids will not be in some of those after-school programs, some of those camps and clubs where there are caring adults who look after them, who are mentoring them, who also, as you said, have those eyes on them and might notice a child coming in with bruises, a child's behavior or their kind of demeanor changing and being more upset, and being able to talk to them and find them, possibly find out what's happening and how they can best serve them. That won't be happening nearly as much. And where nonprofit community-based organizations can really basically come in and fill a gap, and through these additional funds, we'll be able to fill that gap even more, is community-based organizations are still interacting with children and families. Some of it is happening remotely, but they are on the ground. They work with families day to day. They mobilize local volunteers. They have staff who are based in and come from our local communities. So they provide basically another kind of layer or another group of professionals who do have eyes on kids, and who are seeing them sometimes in sort of less formal structures of school and after school programs. If the kids aren't there, they may still be involved with an organization that's doing something a slightly less formal in the community. And they have those relationships with families, those trusted relationships, where families who may be worried about something that's happening to someone, a child, or who see it in others, when they're not engaging with the kind of more formal system, they will often use, you know, trusted individuals, trusted organizations that they know in their communities to raise their concerns or their fears, to put kids on the radar and attention of nonprofits. And that's the role that we want to play, as organizations that have really been advocating for this, is to say we can actually be another, a kind of a stronger additional layer and sort of that safety net. And where if a child isn't going to be in school, and so teachers won't notice those bruises, there are actually community organizations that still have a good likelihood that they might see that kid and be able to intervene earlier, and sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
And go ahead. I'd kind of dig into that anymore if you would like to.
Yes, please. And if you could relate to how this is operating during the pandemic with certain regulations and restrictions, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, so how this could look in, and how this could look in practice is how some of us are already operating, mm-hmm. and how, you know, a lot of community organizations continue to adapt and evolve to how do we keep our community safe because of COVID-19, but at the same time make sure that we are interacting and engaging with kids. You know, a lot of organizations had to kind of move to a more remote way of working with clients in the short term when the pandemic was kind of very unknown and mm-hmm. none of us knew quite what we should be doing, and did we have enough PPE, did folks have enough face masks and other protective equipment to safely engage with families and communities. I think we're now very much through that. Not very much through, we're through that, and I think we've all learned how to be safe but actually be working with families face to face. To use Parent Creek as an example, you know, we now have procured, we've been donated, we've bought protective equipment, face masks, gloves, masks, you know, face shields, things like that, hand sanitizer. So we are out in the community, we are engaging with children and families, and we do some of that health screening before we might, you know, sit down and talk to them. We meet with them outdoors. We do some safety around not necessarily going into homes in the ways that we used to, and very much engaging in that trusted conversation with our children and families to say, hey, we all know that COVID-19 is an issue right now. How do I help keep you safe? Could you wear this mask? How do you help keep me safe? You know, here's what we will do together. And so that will be the ways with this levy support, is that organizations like Parent Creek, Children's Center, Clacton's Windsor, whoever it will be that may be applying for these funds, will basically be able to mobilize more staff to respond safely within the kind of coronavirus pandemic, but actually reach more kids.
Wow, that's amazing that your organization and others have been keeping up the fight to help children and youth in Clackamas County, despite all of the safety needs or safety requirements because of the coronavirus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
and it's been something that's changed, you know, it's been all, you know, sometimes it's changed daily or weekly.
Sure.
I want to say sometimes it's felt like it's changed hourly, but that might be a small exaggeration. But it has been, you know, having to really respond on a constant basis to, you know, additional information from guidance, whether it's county guidance, state guidance, CDC guidance. But always with that view is, you know, we don't want to be, our staff don't want to be kind of stuck at home, not engaging with kids and families. They want to be out there meeting them face to face in a safe way. And so the question that we've always been asking all these organizations is, so how do we keep our staff safe? How do we protect the clients and the participants or the community members we work with? But how do we make sure that we are out there providing those services? And I think that's, you know, that kind of nimbleness and that ability to respond quickly and adapt on a kind of almost daily basis is when nonprofits excel and community-based organizations excel. They are able to respond very quickly and to see an emerging need, to see maybe a very, very localized crisis, and can almost respond in the moment, often, you know, kind of more official agencies, they are fantastic in their response, and they have often sort of, they can mobilize kind of greater resources, but they're often, that's kind of often what sort of that follow-up that happens. And if you take a, you know, a natural disaster emergency as an example, and not to pick on FEMA because they're an amazingly formidable agency and they do some amazing work. But when you think of some of those stories of a hurricane or an earthquake, mm-hmm. you often see local families, local organizations, they're kind of like the first groups to mobilize and respond. You have your first responders, the police and the fire and the emergency services. But once you're talking about kind of rebuilding a community or responding to those emerging needs, it's often those very localized organizations that figure out what children and families need most in that moment. They often provide that kind of first layer of response. And then they help those same children and families access the kind of more formal types of services and supports that they may need. And so this may be, these examples here could be, you know, local nonprofits, local community organizations may identify, you know, a child who is at high risk of abuse and neglect or who has already been exposed to violence, respond very quickly, support that family, support that child, but also then work with them to get them the medical care that they might need, to get them to counseling and psychological support that might be appropriate, to get them to housing services that the county or the state are providing. But it's often the nonprofit that is providing that very first link to get them the immediate help and support they need to then allow them to progress into kind of more sustainable services.
Can you talk about how those in charge of this levy, so the Clackamas County, who I obviously will be in charge of this levy, will be held accountable for the funding. You know, there's going to be various measures for Clackamas voters to be voting on, and many folks are stressed about finances. Can you talk about why this is a necessity in terms of funding?
Yeah. So again, you've asked some great questions. So another way of asking that is, you know, why this levy and why now? And is it a good investment for the average voter to pay a tiny little bit more? I think it's the price of a couple coffees per week additional in property taxes. So why now is, first of all, it's a tiny investment, and like I answered it, said a little bit earlier, is a very small investment now and a very small amount of money now to help prevent further trauma and abuse, you know, really pays dividends and saves a lot more money for us as taxpayers down the line when kids are more successful. Kids are more successful as adults, and then our communities are more successful. And that's both in their health and happiness, but also economically.
And for listeners who want to read the material that you are just now talking about, can you give any resources, websites for folks listening?
So our website is yesforclackamaskids.org. So that would be all one word, yesforclackamaskids.org. So that will be where all of the information on the children's safety levy itself, and how it's going to voters, etc.
Simon, is there anything I didn't ask you that you wanted to include in this conversation?
I think the only thing not to ask is, you know, if you can air this, or, you know, it's a call to action is, you know, for anyone who's in your listening audience, who's a Clackamas County voter, or is not, but should be a registered voter, is, you know, we really need, our communities need you to support this measure. We need you to advocate for it with your friends and your families and in your communities and your church, in your place of work, wherever it is that you go. If you hear about this, if it comes up in conversation, or if you can start the conversation. And again, just to say, you know, yes for Clackamas Kids, this is a really once in a lifetime opportunity to invest in some much needed services to keep kids safe.
This is Claire Rosciotto with KBOO Evening News.